pride, a conceit based on the view of the transitory collection that puts on an air of superiority regarding one's external or internal level of qualities. So although there are other delusions as well, are dependent on the egoistic attitude or the subgrasping mind. But this mental attitude, the pride, the afflictive emotion, so is immediately preceding cause. So the kind of object of that pride would be the qualities of the external qualities like wealth, fame, or inner qualities like the knowledge and attractive physical bodies and courage and so forth. These would be like the basis or the reasons for generating conceit or pride. So when pride arises in you, then you would have a baseless kind of pride or conceit, thinking that, oh, I have the capacity to do that and so forth. So here actually we should make the distinction between the proper sense of confidence and pride. Although these two look very alike, but the pride is something negative, or the conceit is negative, and the positive confidence is something to be adopted, which is required. And they are actually, as for the divisions of pride, there are seven different divisions. Say like the pride which feels that, oh, I'm something great, or the pride of pride, viewing others to be other superior beings, to be you're trying to be very competitive about those superior beings, and thinking that yourself is greater than others. So actually, there are seven divisions of such of this pride. Ignorance, the next affliction, ignorance, a disturbed state of not knowing with regard to the nature of the four truths, karmic effects, and the three jewels due to an unclear mind. And this ignorance, it is of two kinds, one which is mere absence of knowledge, and the other distorted perception or distorted knowledge. And this is the kind of ignorance identified here, specifically in relation to the compendium of higher learnings composed by Asanga. So if speaking purely from the very subtle concept of selflessness and versus selflessness and dependent origination, so there we'll have to posit the variance of all these different afflictions in terms of subtlety. Each of the afflictions, say anger, pride, whatever, they can be classed into two, on the grosser level and the other subtle one. And
bit, aren't they? Anyhow, China and your talk.
So, if you look at these two divisions of the same affliction, for example, anger, so we see that the one subtler is actually the one which is derived from this ignorance or the self-grasping mind which apprehends the intrinsic or the true existence of that object. So from that perspective, we see that even those attitudes, mental attitudes as attachment and anger and so forth, if they belong to the subtler category, they should be also mistakenly apprehending the true mode of existence of the object that it is attached to or it is averse to. And then and yet these emotions, negative emotions as attachment, anger, which are the subtler, which belongs to the subtler category, yet they are not classified as ignorance grasping an inherent existence, although they do grasp at inherent existence, because the manner in which they grasp at inherent existence and the way the ignorance grasp at inherent existence vary again in terms of, in ways of the stronghold. So the ignorance grasping inherent existence, so that is actually apprehending the inherent existence through its own power, not by way of dependence on some other negative emotions, or rather the attachment and anger and so forth, which are subtler ones, although they apprehend the intrinsic existence, and yet they do that through the power of the ignorance, through the power of the self-grasping mind. As such, we can see the difference in terms of the apprehension, how strong they are apprehending the object's intrinsic existence. And whereas this, the grosser levels of delusions, like attachment and anger, so they don't really apprehend the intrinsic existence. So it is because of this that we say that these subtle states of attachment and anger and so forth, although they apprehend intrinsic existence, and yet they are not classified as ignorance or self-grasping mind. And next, a doubt. The thought, do they exist or not? Are they or not? With regard to those three objects, the four truths, etc. So normally, this doubt need not necessarily be afflictive in nature. So here, actually, it should be specifically mentioned or addressed as the afflictive doubt. So because for someone who is a genuine practitioner, who is a genuine follower of those great Buddhist literature, he or she must have a very powerful, a very strong sense of doubt. Sense of doubt in the very content matter of that text that he is going to study. So, such students of those very texts, so he or she, they should really, first of all, see whether or not this text has any kind of purpose for you following that text. And then also, he or she should have the doubt that whether or not this text would have the final or the ultimate purpose for having the capacity to lead the disciples or the followers to the state of enlightenment. So this kind of the virtuous or the positive doubts will then lead that those disciples, tourists, more questions. And because of these questions, the person will, the disciple will be then led to investigation. And this investigation will again lead the disciple to arrive at a proper conclusion. As such, these virtuous or the positive doubts are not something afflictive, not something to be abandoned, shunned, but rather they are to be adopted. So as such, we are not supposed to generalize by saying that doubt as a whole is considered as afflictive, one of the afflictive emotions. So next, afflictive wisdom. The afflictive wisdom has further five divisions. So the following five divisions are categorized under this topic as the main affliction called the afflictive wisdom. So the first of the five afflictive emotion, afflictive wisdom, is the view of the transitory collection. So here, this is since this is according to the higher trainings as taught by Asanga, so it should be identified as that very distorted wisdom which apprehends the self to be something, a master, something like a master, or a appropriator of the aggregates. So here, when you say the appropriator, it can be said in terms of two. One is the self, or the person. And whereas when you associate this self or the person in relation to those aggregates or those parts of the person, like eye, like your eyes, nose, and so forth, or your relatives and so forth, so you say my. So there is the dimension of the I and mine. So when you speak about this this my or the mine, so that is actually done in relation to the self. As such, viewing the self or this my to be something as a appropriator or the possessor, as something actually as if like a separate governor, separate administrator over those aggregates or the parts that this self possess. And whereas the subtler or the subtlest aspect of this view of the transitory collection has to be identified as that distorted wisdom which through perceiving the aggregates, then viewing those aggregates to be existing as inherently or truly, then on top of that, this distorted wisdom imagines or apprehends the self to be existing as inherently. So that with distorted wisdom, which apprehends the intrinsic or true existence of the self, is defined, is actually then considered or categorized as the view of the transitory collection. And here the text reads, "The view of the transitory collection, a deluded intelligence with regard to the perpetuating aggregates, viewing them as self or belonging to the self, and calling them I or mine." Here, transitory, transitory implies impermanence and collection many. So the base being viewed is only an impermanent and manifold phenomena, and there is no permanent unitary person. In order to indicate that, it has been given the name view of the transitory collection. Next, views holding on to an extreme position.